If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
He played the long game, and Cristiano Ronaldo has finally got his revenge on Norwich City for that 2-0 defeat at Carrow Road in April 2005. 16 years ago, CR7 was back in Norfolk. Five-time Ballon d'Or winner. He's won the Euros, become a legend with Real Madrid, but he came back to Norwich and got his revenge. Welcome to this week's edition of the Pinkham.com Norwich City podcast as we look back on Manchester United's very narrow 1-0 win over Norwich City, thanks to a pretty cruel penalty decision dispatched expertly by Mr. Ronaldo, 36 years old and still the star of the show. Dave Freezer here alongside Paddy Davitt and Connor Southwell. We also come to you in association with Future Radio 107.8 FM, and three games in four without a goal now, Pad. But I think, considering when you reflect on that, there's still a fair bit of positivity around about how Norwich are progressing at the moment.
Oh, tremendous credit for me for that performance. Yeah, okay, the result does, and the lack of goals continues a bit of a worrying little theme since Dean Smith came in, and everything seemed to be so positive, but for me, you can't really dig them out at all. And we've not even got into the adversity both prior to the game and then during the game in terms of the personnel and the depletion to the ranks that he's had to deal with to dredge that performance. And of course, no doubt this will be portrayed in national circles as United didn't play well, United didn't turn up, United weren't at the races. But you have to give credit to Norwich, I think, for nullifying a lot of what they could have been about, because you still looked at their team sheet at kickoff and thought, wow, they've got some amazing attacking players, real depth of talent, but not a bit of it. Norwich, and we will get into the penalty award itself, but over the entirety of the piece, more than merited a draw. And you could argue David De Gea made some excellent saves in that second half, could have been another famous win over a team from Manchester. But That's what tends to happen when you're down the wrong end and you come up against these high-profile teams and individuals as well, that just in those key moments, you don't get the decisions. And definitely a sense of a hard luck story tonight, because, I thought, arguably, I'm trying to just sort of click back now since the Southampton game under Smith, I think that was as good a performance, I think, to rival any of the previous ones for me, given the level of opposition. And all it was missing was, which we've heard already too often this season and in recent times under Smith, is that attacking cutting edge. If they'd had that, they win this game for me. And what that would have done to transform the kind of scene in terms of the league table, because that would have put them really back in touch. As it is, a lot of positives and plaudits, but ultimately no points. And that's the frustration, I think.
Yeah, as we record Saturday evening, Burnley and Newcastle both play on Sunday, but Watford lost on Friday, so Norwich, whatever, are going to finish the weekend 3 points from safety. But Leeds and Southampton both lost today as well, so it's still pretty tight down there. And I think, I did say to you before before kickoff, didn't I, Connor, that as long as they win one of these two games, then they're going to be fine. They're in a good place. But they now go into the Villa game against a refreshed Emi Buendia, dare we say it, looking a little bit... well, they were running on empty towards the end of this one, weren't they? Because they made five changes, most of those were enforced, and they're sort of down to the bare bones a bit, aren't they?
Yeah, and that's what makes, for me, the performance all the more impressive when you look at the players they didn't have available, even down to Rashica and Norman, influential players in their sides. You've got your captain coming off after 21 minutes, and then to produce the level of performance that they did, the standard that they did. And, you know, Paddy's right. Nationally, there's going to be a lot of talk about what Manchester United didn't do. But for me, there should be a lot of talk about what Norwich City did do and the circumstances in which they did it. That is the most impressive thing. And we've been on here before this season talking about ways to lose football matches. If you're going to lose a football match, that is the way to do it. Fully committed, hardworking, giving a performance to your supporters. And I know Dean Smith says he doesn't want to be a glorious loser, but ultimately the more performances they can produce, the more likely they are to get points. And if they can replicate that level of performance, and I think you're right in the question you asked to Pad, really, in terms of the performances, they are improving. They are showing a lot more solidity at the back. There were points where I looked at their defensive shape and it was vastly improved to what it was a month or two ago. It's now just about, okay, Dean Smith's, if we're using Dean Smith's checklist, they're harder to beat. They're hard working. They're organised. Carrow Road's a difficult place to come. Now it's just about adding the final bit, which is about the quality in the final third. And he said in his analysis that there were a couple of times they worked an overload and just didn't make the right decision or quality was lacking. If they can just improve those moments, then I think we've got a team that looks a lot more like a Premier League team, dare I say it. And, you know, you stretch that across however many games you've got left. I'm not very good at math, so you might have to help me out. 20-something.
Was that the 16th game?
Yeah.
So 22?
22. Yeah. So 22 games left. They probably need 8 wins from that to stay up. I think you'd probably say that's a lot more likely now than it was a month ago. So they're in the right direction, but ultimately what Smith says about being a glorious loser is right, because there will be a lot of people out there who goes, it's all very well and good, these performances and improvement, but if you're not picking up points, it's largely irrelevant, because points win prizes, don't they? So, yeah, lots of positives. Just probably a little bit frustrating that they couldn't get the point. But I think the fact that we've left Carrow Road with David De Gea being man of the match and Ronaldo being forced to win a penalty to ensure that Manchester United, with their embarrassment of riches, they brought on Mason Greenwood in the second half, which is, you know, says a lot of the quality they have. They reduced them to very little. And I think every Norwich City fan will have left that game feeling very encouraged and very hopeful about perhaps where this season could go.
It feels like they're singing off the same hymn sheet, at least. They're pulling in the right direction together, and I feel like the restart, the fresh start, has worked to a certain extent. And even if they do go down, as long as they're putting in this kind of committed performance, then I don't think people would have a huge problem with it. That's kind of where Norwich exists. We all hope that one day they can crack the code to somehow survive in the Premier League as a self-funded club, but we all know that the degree of difficulty in that regard is really high. But Ronaldo, you know, what did he really do otherwise? He was a bit of a statue, wasn't he? He's all the criticism you've heard about him in the national media and about how, you know, he doesn't really press and things like that. It's remarkable that you think Billy Gilmore was a toddler. He was 4 years old or whatever when he was here with Man United for that 2-0 defeat under Sir Alex and all that stuff all those years ago. But yeah, that United weren't anything special, I didn't think. They certainly were nowhere near the Chelsea or Man City or Liverpool teams that we saw in Norwich. I mean, the more you reflect actually on the opening weekend and how Norwich played against Liverpool, they actually played quite well in that game. And I dare say that Daniel Farke will look back on that and rue that day a little bit. Let's take it a little bit chronologically then, Pad, and just talk about those changes, because we've mentioned them. Exacerbated totally by Grant Hanley having to go off in the 20th minute, but it was five changes. Williams, we knew, had to go out anyway because he was against his parent club, so couldn't feature. So you knew this came in for him. Gibson and Omobamadeli dropped out of the squad totally. Lise Malou and Ida on the bench. So that meant Kabak coming in to central defence, moving back to a 4-3-3. Rupp coming in for Lees Malou in midfield. Sargent actually played on the left as the protection for Yiannoulis, almost as the part of the front three. And then the surprise, Shemet Poheta, came in on the right wing and did okay. But we'll come back to that. So what was sort of the latest that Smith was able to say after the game, given that there's such a tight turnaround? It's only 3 days. I mean, Norman ahead of this one, they were hoping might be back involved. We even saw Sam Byram on the bench today, didn't we? So, yeah, there's a lot to digest.
Hell of a lot, yeah. I mean, try and take it from Friday morning when Smith did his pre-match and Rashid, we know, probably not going to see him until early in the new year with a groin issue. Norman, yes, they were hopeful that Man United would be the one they could target. Didn't quite come to pass. And on Friday morning, Dean Smith said, really now depends how he feels over this weekend, whether Villa might come too soon. But if it isn't to be Villa, then you got the clear sense that, is it West Ham away weekend? So hopefully Norman should be back, certainly by the West Ham fixture. And that was the situation. But of course then, tantalisingly, said there was a couple of other fitness issues and one or two players as well who feeling a little bit unwell and needed PCR tests. Well, taking that one first, Christos Zolis, he confirmed after the game. Connor had the piece earlier today on the Pinkin site. Has tested positive for COVID, will now have to self-isolate in line with the regulations. So obviously unavailable today. Well, we obviously would expect him to be unavailable for Villa, and then I think it will just depend really in terms of whether he's able to come back in for West Ham. And in terms of the knocks, well, quite clearly when the team news dropped an hour before kickoff this afternoon, that was Ben Gibson, who felt his groin, Dean said, after the game tonight in the final training session on Friday. Didn't want to take any risks, hopeful for Tuesday with him that he comes back in. And Omar Bamidele, problem in his lower back, I think Dean Smith said. He didn't really give any indication whether Tuesday would come too soon. But all of that, bad enough. You mapped out the changes that Dean Smith had to go with in his starting lineup. And then, of course, 20 minutes into the game, Big Grant goes to sort of block a Ronaldo air shot and then lands very awkwardly. And we all know he's a fairly robust figure of a man. And most of the weight he is carrying landed on his left elbow / shoulder.
That was Ronaldo's fault, really, as well, wasn't it? Because he sort of chased after him and then just took him out from behind and fell on top of him, didn't he?
He was obviously embarrassed by, you know, the complete horlicks he made of that attempt on the half volley. But
it looked like a classic Hanley thing at first, didn't it? A bit like the Grant Holt thing when he's good at buying a foul off a striker, isn't he? Yeah.
Well, he did that. His first meaningful act was on the other side of the pitch where he sort of kind of, I can't think who he shut down. It might have been Rashford. And yeah, that got his body in front, felt the contact, went down, got a free kick. But sadly, on this occasion, it was a heavy, heavy old tumble. It was, for me, alarm bells immediately, because he lay prone on the deck and, you know, we know what type of character he is. If he's not hurt, he's getting back up again. It's almost an affront to his manhood. So straight away, you felt this is a bad one. And then he did rejoin after a bit of physio consultation, but couldn't proceed, came off. And then towards the end of the game, there was a camera shot of him rather forlornly with his arm in a sling watching the game from the mouth of the tunnel. Dean Smith said too early to tell. Of course, it would be immediately after the game. But you have to think, even if it's on the minor end of the scale and we say, and this is purely hypothetical, if it was a, you know, severe bruising rather than maybe a dislocation or ligament damage, that Tuesday's probably going to come too soon for him. And what you just hope now, given both Gibson and Omar Bamidele were not available tonight, that you know, that isn't a long term layoff with him, because that would be a hammer blow given what an influence he is. And all of that culminated in Mr. Versatile Jacob Sorensen being thrown into the fray alongside Ozan Kabak, who prior to tonight had very rarely featured under Smith, if at all. He wasn't even making squads ultimately. Omar Bamidele was the sort of go to beyond Hanley and Gibson. So really, really feared for them when Sorensen appeared. Not a slight on that man, but he, you know, as we saw last season, he can do a job, but it's not his position. But credit those two. I mean, they were excellent given the circumstances they were thrust into. And if the worst comes to the worst and none of the other four mentioned are back for Tuesday, then it'll be those two again. And I certainly wouldn't be too unhappy if it is those two again, because they showed enough tonight that they can at least provide adequate stopgap coverage. But for all those, I mean, I've literally spent about 5 minutes detailing every single injury and twist and turn, or in Zolas' case, COVID. And with all of that adversity, to still produce such a cohesive performance and deserve far more than they got in the end, you know, great credit to Dean Smith, Shakespeare and their coaching prowess, but also to those players who came in as well, because no easy task. Jacob Sorensen, first ever Premier League start in his career, go in on a centre-back position and try and mark Ronaldo and Rashford. I mean, that's a hard hand he was dealt, but boy, did he take it in his stride. And, you know, if you're looking for positives beyond, obviously, the negative of the result, the way that he came in tonight, that could be a big thing for him moving forward in terms of his involvement at Premier League level for Norwich this season.
Well, we'll come back round to them because, I think there were some real positives in there. Kabak and Sorensen, Rupp had a very good first half, certainly Krull had some really important things. But let's discuss the penalty first. Let's sort of get that out of the way. We've all watched it back a few times now, haven't we? And the main thing for me was it just seemed naive from Max. And then when you see the penalty back, Ronaldo is not winning that ball, is he?
No, he isn't. It is a penalty, I think, ultimately. And I'll use my classic gauge, which if that's at the other end, then you want it given, I think, irrespective if Ronaldo's getting the ball or if he isn't. I take Dean Smith's point that you need to make contact with him, but you don't need to make contact with him by putting your arm around his neck, basically. And yes, he does fall theatrically, but that's what
Ronaldo does.
Yeah, that's what I was trying to phrase it a bit more diplomatically than that. But yeah, you're right. It is what he does. And that's why they were willing to have, 74 minutes of him being a statue, because he produces a moment like that. And to be honest, if he was ever going to score, it was going to be a free shot from 12 yards, wasn't it? So, it's just a really silly mistake, I think, from Max. I can understand why he's done it, because we all know the leap that Ronaldo has on him. I mean, there was one moment after that where he basically jumped over Billy Gilmore. It was almost like watching a pole vaulter in action. He completely cleared his head. So
nearly hurt himself, didn't he?
Yeah, he did. So that goes to show the leap that he does have. But yeah, he was never getting to the ball. I get the point. I'm not sure really if it would be given at the other end, but that's just because Norwich don't naturally make as much fuss as Manchester United or the big teams tend to do. There was a handball, I felt, shortly after Gilmore fires a shot in, and Fred seems to move his arms away from his body. No one really appeals for it, and for me, I think if they make a bigger noise of that, they at least get it to VAR.
So that's one from Rashford in the first half, wasn't it? And we were all looking at each other like, is he serious? He was appealing for a penalty, wasn't he? And that's what big clubs do, don't they?
Yeah,
appeal for everything.
It's what they do. And it was almost like if you were wearing red, you were sort of immune from getting a yellow card as well. It's incredible. I mean, McTominay made 6-7 fouls and just didn't get a booking. Mm. So you have to be sly, you have to be clever. And it's those kind of dark arts that I think maybe Norwich fans want to see a bit more of from their team at times. As I said, that penalty appeal, maybe appealing for things more generally. There are a couple of nice free kicks that they can win here and there, but compared to what United do, it's on a different scale. But they've always done that, haven't they? And I think ultimately it probably was a penalty. Once you strip away the theatrics, Max Aarons has his hands in a place that they don't need to be in. Where, as you say, I don't think the ball's reaching him anyway. It's naive, and it's cost them a point in the end, I think.
Yeah, do you concur with that, Pad? I mean, Max will probably say, and Dean Smith sort of said this a bit, didn't he, that there are plenty of strikers who you put your arm on their neck very lightly like you do like that, they probably would just brush it off and wouldn't even think about it going down. But Ronaldo, as soon as he was touched, he was down on the floor. And the way it almost ended up looking like Max has dragged him to the floor quite violently. And it wasn't really that instant, was it?
No. Oh, we just missed the wink, didn't we, if you go back to Wayne Rooney, that England-Portugal encounter. But, and, you know, he's done that all through his career. Connor's right, you know, you could call it a form of cheating. I mean, he would say it's just very, very good gamesmanship on his behalf, and ultimately you break the game down. They got back on the coach, they've won the game, 3 points he scores, he's decided that game, really. both in terms of the act and then the cool penalty. He was never in doubt, was it? As good as Tim Krul is at stopping penalties, that man's that's something else when it comes to taking a spot kick. So, yeah, Max will be frustrated, I'm sure, when he sees that back, because he didn't need to make that challenge. And if I haven't seen that many replays, actually, but it felt like he got himself a bit too deep in his own six-yard box and then...
Panicked.
It was my next word, yeah, because he knows it's Ronaldo and he knows he's got the potential in the air. I mean, he's brilliant in the air. Some of the headers he scored are phenomenal, but I think the trajectory of that ball, when he sees it back on the telly, Max, he will know that he could have let it just basically flow over his head and it would have fell out the far side. It would have been a goal kick and on you go. And... yeah, I'd agree. But for that, the minimum that they got is a point. And who knows, you know, they might just have managed to get up the other end and take one of those chances that, sadly, De Gea proved the last line of defence. But, yeah, it's a tough lesson, tough lesson. It's another reminder, you know, that at this level, you can do so many things right, individually, collectively. But just in those key moments, the right decision at the right time, the right action, you know, whatever it is, whether it's a decision or whether it's the pass, the shot, the tackle, whatever, you get away with that in a championship. You don't get away with it against this level of player.
Right, well, talking of somebody who's good in the air, let's talk about Ozan Kabak, who I gave my man of the match to in my video verdict. Thought that was his best performance so far in a Norwich shirt. I thought he was pretty dominant in the air. I mean, very close to scoring a goal, forced an excellent save from David De Gea, obviously then partnered by Jacob Sorensen. But we've seen, well, those two particularly are both quite modern centre-backs, if you consider Sorensen as a centre-back in this debate, because they're good on the ball, aren't they? And I think he's, well, if Kabak keeps playing like that, he's going to take some shifting. And that's probably saying a fair bit, given that Ben Gibson had hit a bit of a decent seam of form recently, hasn't he? So he's going to be particularly gutted that he's had an ill-timed injury. But yeah, who was the one that stood out for you, Connor?
Yeah, Kabak definitely won. I would agree with you. I thought Rupp was very good in the first half. Sorensen as well. He's like the human equivalent of polyfiller, isn't he? He's just if there's a hole, he'll fill it. It doesn't matter what position it is.
You could go with some very very different analogies. Yeah, but sure, yeah, let's stick with polyfiller.
Yeah, let's go with it. she's completely throwing me off now. I was trying to think of who else there was. I thought collectively there weren't too many players that were probably below level, but as Pad says there, it just shows how much energy and quality you have to exert to win a game of football at this level, and how high the bar is as well, because they can produce a performance like that and still lose 1-0 ultimately. So whereas in the Championship, that level of performance would win you a lot of games, probably the majority of games in the division. So that's kind of where they are in the difference at the moment. But yeah, I would agree on Kabak. He's someone that we've not seen. I think we've kind of said that certainly from the team selections that Dean Smith has picked, he went to a three last weekend. Kabak wasn't one of those three. That would indicate that he maybe isn't as high up in his thoughts as maybe he would like to be. He's a bit of an enigma, I think, when he plays. Decision making wise, he can still be quite raw. I think the fact that maybe Smith has simplified it and said, actually, we don't want you to run out of the back with the ball. We don't want you to play those passes. Well, basically, when he looked good because he didn't really have time on the ball, and I think that's maybe the interesting point, because he steps out of the back at times, and when he does that, he's quite impressive, and he picks his moments to do that quite intelligently. But when he's actually in possession of it, he looks like he wants to, similar to the run against Burnley, he looks like he wants to do that every time he picks up the ball, and it's just learning, I think, about the times that you can do that and you can't do that. And if anyone's going to teach him that, then it will be Dean Smith and Craig Shakespeare, I think. So there's definitely a player in there, and I think when he produces that level of performance, you look at him and you go, yeah, okay, I can understand why Jurgen Klopp and Liverpool liked him and decided to take him. By the same token, when he produces the level of performance we saw against Leeds, it's easy to see maybe why Schalke aren't so keen on him. So somewhere in between those two, we need to find a level of consistency with him. And hopefully now, and we said Grant Hanley's injury, probably, to me it looked like a dislocated shoulder, but I'm no physio, so If it is, then you'd imagine it'll be a few weeks. So he may just get an opportunity, and it was opportunity knocks for him. And I thought he delivered. There was that moment, wasn't there, in the second half where Rashford, although he was offside, went driving through on goal, and he produced a brilliant sort of last-ditch challenge. But also his quality on set pieces as well. He got on a couple of end of those. There was one that De Gea had to produce a brilliant save from, and there was one late on as well where he was offside. So, yeah, I liked what I saw. But like I said, the main thing now is consistency with him, because I don't think quality is an issue. It's just maybe smoothing out some of the rough edges that he's got.
Yeah, he's maturing, isn't he? I think the only thing Schalke are interested in is how much money they can make out of him.
Very true.
But he was drifting, if we're honest. You know, if you go a few games back, he had the glandular fever, which actually dipped him out of things. But people weren't banging down the door in terms of fans for Kabak to be starting, were they? They weren't saying, no, Kabak's got to be ahead of Hanley or whatever. He's still young. He's still 21. But I feel like he is at a point where if he's to have a Premier League future, if he's going to be back playing Champions League football one day like he was not very long ago, April, he was playing in the Champions League quarterfinal against Real Madrid. If he wants to get back to that sort of level and he wants to force his way into a starting role for Turkey, which he doesn't have at the moment, then this is the kind of performance that he's got to be putting in going forward and consistently. And if he does continue to keep up that kind of form and flourish from here, then Norwich have obviously got a serious asset on their hands. So it'd be very interesting to see. While you were talking about the shoulder there, it reminded me of Hugill did something very similar last season, didn't he, at Borough, where he ended up playing on. And if I'm remembering correctly, I think they'd said that initially he'd be out for a month or 6 weeks, but he came back sooner than expected, and he was back on the bench within about 3 weeks, something like that, wasn't he? Because I think Pukki got injured as well, didn't he? So he managed to come back and sort of help out at the time. But I'd have to go back and check that. But regardless, yes, I think you're right in that if you dislocate your shoulder like that, you can damage ligaments, can't you? And then you worst case scenario, you have to have surgery, hopefully not, and you can get back reasonably soon. But that is clearly going to be a big worry for Hanley moving forward. So Kabak continuing to hit that level could be very important. But as Pad said earlier, I wouldn't have any great worries if Sorensen and Kabak are the starting pair on Tuesday night against Villa. Maybe it's better just to tell Sorensen to go and follow Buendia around the pitch. Do what Neil Warnock did with their right back. Who was it? Darnell Johnson?
Fisher,
that's it, yeah. He just told him to follow Buendia the whole game, didn't he? And it worked. Just tell Sorensen to mark Buendia. And finally, Pad, who stood out most for you? Because we mentioned a few names there, haven't we?
Yeah, I think I can't think of anybody really now. Let me think. No, I think Kabak, definitely. I liked Yiannoulis' work. I thought there was a better balance between his attacking and his defensive work. Not perfect by any manner of means, but he looked like a little bit like Kabak. These are guys who desperate for an opportunity. They got one tonight. Huge hope, high profile fixture, world-class attacking options. Beamed around the world. They would have wanted to perform today, and I felt both of them took a step forward. And obviously we mentioned Sorensen as well. But, you know, you could go front to back, really, and pick out positive elements to most of those individual performances, because it needed that. It needed that collective, as Dean Smith said on Friday, it needed 8 out of 10s for Norwich to get the result, and maybe, probably in the final analysis, maybe it was a 7 out of 10, or too many 7 out of 10s, but 7 is still a decent base to work from. But, Tim Krul made one or two good saves in the first half, but those were the key ones, weren't they? I think Kabak, Yiannoulis for me, and obviously Sorensen as well. And it's encouraging because, you know, if Norwich are really going to get to the point where they're going to be competitive for the majority of the season, as is now being proven, it'll be about the depth of quality in the squad, because as has been proven, you know, you're without players like Norman and Rashica, and I think if with a fair wind from what we've seen so far, you'd put both of those into your 11. If you're without Hanley for any length of time as well now, that's a big miss as well. So that's a good start, but it is only a start, and it's probably easier to get yourself up for Ronaldo and Manchester United than it maybe is, with no disrespect to them, to Aston Villa, despite all the subplots around that game. So one swallow doesn't make a summer, as the saying goes, I think. So, and my concern now, without wanting to get too much into the Villa game, is can they dredge that energy and intensity and belief with such a quick, relatively, turnaround as well. I think it's going to be very tough now with the issues around players to get that level of committed performance again on Tuesday night. They're really going to have to look at the recovery phase now over these next sort of 24, 48 hours.
Yeah, it was interesting. There was a training game on the pitch afterwards, wasn't it? In the pouring rain, Craig Shakespeare had all the subs going for a small-sided match. They had Tom Dixon-Peters from the academy joining in, Brandon Williams as well, Campwell and Lees Malou both were taking part as well, because they'd only played about, 15, 20 minutes. So I guess that was with a view to Tuesday, to making sure all those guys are sharp and available. You know, Byron obviously hasn't played football properly for a long time. Jonathan Tonkinson is only just back from an injury himself for the under-23s, just signed a new contract as well, hasn't he? So he doesn't really have, well, he doesn't have any first team experience yet, does he? Did he come on in a game?
Did he played in pre-season, didn't he?
Pre-season, that's what I'm thinking of, isn't it? Yeah. But yeah, anyway, eight out of 10s, four of them got an 8 out of 10 in my ratings for the video. Kabak, Rupp, Sorensen and Krull. Rupp was excellent first half, and I think at the moment he's ahead of Lees Malou quite clearly.
All day long.
Yeah, Lees Malou has got to find another gear, because he is looking like almost like Rashica was at the start of the season, in terms of you thinking, is this guy going to pick up the Premier League rhythm and the pace? You know, this was a guy who was playing at a good level in France. He was playing for Nice, you know, sort of top half team every year, and he was a regular. He wore the captain's armband for them. He's an experienced player over there. At the moment, he's just not in hitting his straps, and he didn't. Well, there were a couple of bad moments, really. He got booked, obviously, in injury time. He very nearly conceded a penalty, although he was clearing up after Campwell, really. So those two didn't have the best of days. I don't want to go over Sargent again, because I know you guys did that in the Monday Night Club, which is the new part of Pink and Plus subscribers, where we focus in on one particular subject. So keep an eye out on that. We put that out Monday, unsurprisingly. but it's essentially the Pink and Podcast Extra Time. So that'll be out Monday night. The other player I wanted to touch on, though, was Poeta, who we did mention earlier was the surprise. Played on the right, his first Premier League start, only his second start of the season, because he played for Poland against San Marino, which was a bit of a free hit for him, wasn't he? Got an assist that day. And his first start for Norwich since February, since the game at Swansea, which kind of finished his season, really, didn't he? He'd had a little run in the team where he just wasn't convincing, and he looked so lacking in confidence and things like that. So, yeah, what do you make of him, Connor?
I thought he did okay. There was part of me in the first half, I'll admit, that wondered if they'd put him on the right wing so they could almost coach him through it. But there were a couple of times positionally where he just got a bit lost, and defensively let a man go and stuff like that. But overall, I thought it was pretty good. He didn't look out of place, I would say, on that right side. There was a lot of good work, particularly going forwards. There were a few nice touches that just created a little bit of space, if not for himself, then for others. So, yeah, I think he should be sitting at home in his slippers, watching Match of the Day, feeling quite pleased with himself tonight.
I think he's more of a kimono and what are they called? Like the hotel slip-on ones.
I can see the ponytail comes down, he swishes the hair. Yeah, that would be him relaxing. He'd need something soft on his feet, wouldn't he? Because he's quick. But we digress. Yeah, I thought it was solid, if not somewhat unspectacular, but. Yeah, again, the issue we're looking at probably is when it comes down to real quality in the final third. He's not the issue, and I don't want to make it sound like he's the issue, but I'm also not really convinced that he's the solution or part of the solution either, unfortunately. And there is still a rawness to him, and I know Smith said after the game that they've been doing a lot of work with him, and I felt you could see that. So yeah, I think he should be encouraged, but I still think that we need to see a bit more if we're going to be talking about Semi Poeta in a Premier League team on a consistent basis. But I would say I probably feel more encouraged now than I did, as you said, in the back end of last season when we saw those performances, and he didn't really look where they needed him to be. probably same again, but I'd probably say he's closer now than maybe he was. So maybe that's a testament to the work that that Dean Smith and Craig Shakespeare have been putting in, and him as well, for his application. So yeah, I think he'll be pleased overall.
Absolutely. Well, it will be interesting to see where he goes. At least he has shown that he can contribute, because he some good corners. He did actually create a few bits and pieces, didn't he? But yeah, far from perfect. But you'd think that pace would be an asset off the bench at the right time. But we're in a tough little run of games here. Villa on Tuesday night. It takes on a pretty big significance, really, when you go to West Ham next Saturday and then Arsenal Boxing Day back at Carrow Road. This is tough run of matches. You know, you've got Palace and Leicester, I think, are the two games before we break off for the FA Cup, which is Charlton away on a Sunday, January the 9th, I think that is, yeah. Off the top of my head, isn't it? So that's going to be, well, you'd say it's an opportunity for a Premier League team to get through if they want to, but I don't think it's going to be top of Dean Smith's priorities, to be perfectly honest.
Welcome to the new normal.
Hello, and welcome to this series of Unfinished with me, Charles Thompson.
Welcome to Weird Norfolk.
Welcome to this week's edition of the Pinkin.com Norwich City podcast.
From true crime to football, politics to folklore, for more great podcasts from Archant, head to audioboom.com/channel/Archant.
Top of the priorities for everyone, and a name that we've already said on the podcast and is going to be said a great deal more in the next few days, Emi Buendia, is coming back to Carrow Road. Now, I'm always fearful of these situations, Pad, particularly a reigning player of the season, as Andy Marshall was, I believe, if I'm remembering that correctly, when he came back to Carrow Road. That was the first season after he'd joined Ipswich. And yeah, he'd left as player of the season on a free to join Ipswich. And I always remember that day because I was in the Barclay that day and he was given absolute pelters, I believe is the common phrase. The Barclay tore into him from minute one when he trotted out onto the Carrow Road pitch and just abused him mercilessly throughout the game, you know, calling him Judas and all that sort of stuff. He was public enemy number one. And what happened? He played a blinder. I think, if I'm remembering correctly, Ipswich won 2-0 that day and Marshall was man of the match. So, we know Emi loves the spotlight. One way or another, I am convinced his name is going to be in the headlines on Tuesday night. Which sort of headlines do you think it'll be?
Well, I mean, am I right in saying, Connie, did you say he didn't feature for Villa this afternoon? They were at Liverpool and they got beat 1-0.
Came on for the final 20 minutes.
Oh, he came on, did he? Right, okay. So, yeah, I don't know what to. Yeah, if you're Gerrard and you know all the backstory, then you start him Tuesday night, and wind him up and watch him go. And I mean, it's not to draw the parallel with Marshall. It's not a player who's left on under a cloud or bad terms. I mean, phenomenal player for Norwich on the pitch and financially. You know, for what they paid, even with the promotion bonus top up that went to Getafe. Many, many more millions of pounds came the other way with that summer transfer to Villa. So, from a financial point of view, from a football point of view, Emi Buendia was brilliant for Norwich. So, I would imagine, and as you rightly said, Dave, you know, the fact that he was voted player of the season, the Norwich fans, the majority of anyway, at least, shared the same opinion. So, okay, you know, he made it quite clear that maybe he felt his time was done and he wanted to move on. And there may be some who hold that against him, but I think ultimately most Norwich fans would say that, you know, the fact is he could have gone maybe when they got relegated the previous time in the Premier League, but he stayed and not only played his part, played a leading part. He was one of, if not the single biggest reason why they came back in the manner they did. His goals and his assist count were frightening from a player who isn't an out-and-out forward, as we know. But so I think on balance, he should get an excellent, you know, reception, but ultimately a little bit like you know, Madison has found now as time has gone on. You know, the first couple of times with Leicester, you know, he was fated. I remember, I think the first game actually was away at Leicester, and every time he went to take a corner in front of that away end, you know, they were clapping him, kind of thing. I don't think we'll kind of get to that levels when if he's on the pitch and there's a corner down in the snake pit end, I don't suddenly see them rising to a man, woman and child to applaud him as he takes a corner for Villa. So, but certainly maybe when his name was read out at the beginning, if he's in the lineup, you know, give him the applause he's due. But thereafter, you know, basically run over the top of him and Aston Villa if you're a Norwich person, and just hope against hope that he doesn't view it as I'm back at Carrow Road and I want to show these people how good I was. But I don't see that being in his makeup, because I don't think it ended on a toxic level. You know, he was brilliant for Norwich and Norwich were brilliant for him, so I think everybody won in that particular relationship, and the best outcome. You know, he plays well, but Norwich win the game, I think. Let's all hope that's the case come Tuesday night.
There was that awkward moment with Maddison in the 1-1 draw, wasn't there, when he sort of squared up to Tete, and then he was like, oh, it's Alex Tete. I don't want to square it to Alex. And they almost sort of laughed it off in the end, didn't they? And he was a little bit aggy a few times in that game. And that's the thing with Buendia, is that he is that type, isn't he? He is wholehearted, he's going to go for it full bore, and all he will want to do is win that game and be the star of the show, because that's what he wants to do every single game. He's still trying to persuade the Villa fans, frankly, isn't he, that he is worth 38 million pound deal, 33 million up front, more than doubled his wages. I think on paper it was a perfectly sensible move for him, and he was unreal last year. He was unplayable at times. He was such a delight to watch play football, and he was better than Maddison was, isn't it? I don't think there's any doubt about that in terms of one season, and just in terms of numbers, he was more productive than Maddison was in that one excellent season with Norwich as well. So the way I would like to see it approached, I don't think it will happen, because I think some people will boo him just because it's sort of a natural instinct. But I think you've got to kill him with kindness. I think you've got to, you know, applaud him onto the pitch, cheer his name, not let him get wound up, because he's got a temper on him, hasn't he? From a fan's point of view, from the player's point of view, yeah, poke him in the ribs at a corner, say something in his ear, do whatever you can to wind him up, because that's on the football pitch. But from a supporter's point of view, I don't think you want to give him any extra motivation, because he is capable of destroying Norwich if he wants to.
Yeah, it's a shame. Well, obviously we don't know, but presumably Grant Hanley's not going to be on the pitch, because
yeah, good point.
You'd imagine he'd have relished that particular tussle, and as you say, well, we've seen it a few times. He's capable when the red mist descends. Often that ends in a red card. So yeah. there is that side as well, which maybe Norwich City players will know how to get at, maybe a lot easier than other teams will, but. Yeah, I mean, what a talent. It was criminal, really, that he was ever a championship footballer, to be completely honest. And, you know, it will take time, naturally, I think, for him to show what he is at Aston Villa. He's had a change of manager. It's a team that's a bit in transition. They spent a lot of money. Obviously, Dean Smith ultimately paid the price for that. But, yeah, I think he will get a positive reception, because what he did last season, I would be hard pressed, particularly since I've been watching, covering Norwich City, for an individual player to have as good a season as he had. I can't really think of any off the top of my head. I suppose you'd probably be going back to maybe Grant Holt and what he did. Wes Houlihan maybe as well, but individually, I think Buendia was superb. But yeah, hopefully it ends in a red card and a Norwich win. I think that's what most people will be hoping, and then once he gets sent off, you can give him the nice standing ovation.
I could just see it now. You think of all the joy when Lambert got sent off, because that was a totally different one, because that had become sort of hatred. This one would just be hilarious. The Norwich fans would be just so delighted to see him, and I can see him throwing his hands around, stropping around, turning the air blue, swearing at Max Aarons or whatever. Because they had a bit of a tempestuous relationship at times, as we heard behind closed doors, didn't we? When they got a bit sweary at each other sometimes, when you know, Emmy hadn't tracked back or whatever. But just after he's elbowed someone or he's tackled someone stupidly or whatever, the whole of Carrow Road would just be in fits of laughter, wouldn't they? While he stropped off the pitch, because it would just be the most inevitable thing to happen. And if it does, it would be exceptionally funny. But ultimately, you, of course, you just want Norwich to win this game. You want Emi to have a bad game and it's sort of to go without incident and not have to worry about it. But once it's out of the way, other than the Villa Park game as well, I'm sure Norwich fans will be, on the whole, hoping that he does go and play for Argentina and that he does go and play at the top of the game, because he's got the ability to do it if he can keep his head together and keep his cool. And that is maybe what we'll start to see a bit of a sign of. If he does go and do something stupid like that, he's going to really mark his card in a bad way with his new manager, which is Steven Gerrard, who isn't going to take any rubbish from maybe Wendy, is he? He is a legend of English football in the Premier League. To him, Emi Buendia has got to win him over and really make his mark at Aston Villa. So it'll be really interesting to see what happens. But it's certainly going to be a good spectacle, and it's certainly a match which means a great deal to both teams as well. So we will, of course, be building up to that from Monday morning, from when Dean Smith has his press conference. If you haven't already got stuck into Pink and Plus, then please do. You've probably heard us speak a fair bit about it in the last couple of weeks.
We've not mentioned it, Dave. Not mentioned it.
Have we not mentioned it?
I don't think so.
Yes, very rarely.
Pink and Plus, £1.99 a month or £20 up front for the year. You'll be noticing, if you're already subscribing or if you're not, that more and more stuff is now moving behind the paywall, as it were, becoming more exclusive to Pink and Plus. So Paddy's Pointers today, the NCFC live blog, Six Things will be on Monday morning. You'll start to get the rhythm of it. And if you're still sticking with the old websites, where, of course, the match report was still on there, starting 11s, the news will still be on there, essentially. If Norwich sack the manager, if they sign a new player, that will still be on the websites. But I think in the weeks and months to come, you'll start to get the rhythm of that, and you get the first 60 days free anyway, so it's worth giving it a try. But for now, Pad, Connor, thank you very much for your thoughts. As I mentioned earlier, watch out for the Monday Night Club, which will be the bonus part of the Pinkham podcast, and we'll drill down into more of the big issues. But for now, this was the latest edition of the Pinkham.com Norwich City podcast in association with Future Radio 107.8 FM, and we will catch up with you very soon.